Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Welcome to the Agency in Focus SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos. Now here's your host, Eric White.
One of the main challenges defense leaders deal with is not just making sure the technology their agencies use is up to date, but also their process for purchasing that technology to address critical needs. Federal News Radio Scott Massioni hosted a recent AFSEA Nova panel discussing how to improve warfighter readiness through innovative acquisition strategies. One of the guests was Deborah Woods. She's the Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command. She began by discussing SOCOM's unique needs and acquisition approaches.
We have everything from tactical radios, UHF, VHF, SATCOM, HF, all the way to wideband, super high frequency, SATCOM terminals, and then we cover our whole enterprise and IT acquisition from workstations to servers, storage, all our data centers for all of our networks. And one thing that's unique about our enterprise is that we support on our same environment from garrison all the way down to the tactical edge to the deployed warfighter. So that's a little unique. We do leverage DLA for some, you know, if we're just buying one or two, so that's good. And we take full advantage of GSA and some of their GWAC contracts to, you know, that's another thing that helps us cut down on our acquisition timeline.
So I'm going to kind of shoehorn this into transaction authority contracts. It's something that's on a lot of people's minds. And first of all, I just want to see if you were leveraging those at all. And Deborah, I know you have Title 10 authority, so OTAs might be a little more in your wheelhouse or maybe not, depending on how you're using emergency acquisitions.
Right, yes. So that's an area that we're really trying to lean forward on and make sure that we obtain other authorities in that space. To date, the center's done about five OTAs and had success with it. I can tell you, at least in my organization, we did try one, and it was not successful, and it really drug out and delayed schedule on an effort. I think that was more probably on the vendor side, not necessarily the vehicle, but it's really too new for me to share what, you know, as far as benefits and so forth.
And I have one more question on OTAs. Are you finding that you're getting enough, at least in your experience with the OTAs, you're getting enough non-traditional contractor interest? And do you have any concerns over the amount of oversight that OTAs have? There's been a huge ramp up of the authorities that OTAs have been given, but they're not something new. They've been going on since, you know, the early 2000s and even the 1990s. But it seems like they're just coming back in vogue again. So, you know, is this something new that could go wrong? We talked, General Ostrowski talked this morning about how the Army is leveraging, I think, $3.5 billion in more than 550 of these contracts already. So do you have any concerns, and are you getting enough supply from these non-traditional contractors?
So we do have an acquisition agility directorate who's focused on, who SOFWERX falls under that, and focused on all these OTAs and different ways to get after acquiring capability. Under that office, they have a partnership intermediary agreement. I mentioned Doolittle Institute. So they're able to go out in their ecosystem, and people from all over can sign up through that website and get notifications, et cetera, and then they push out. So they are reaching a lot of non-traditional DoD type business partners. So, I mean, we are seeing that. As far as how things are going to come to fruition, and as we get a little more comfortable in some of these processes, and it is a different way of thinking about it. You know, you have contracting officers who grew up in a very traditional, deliberate approach, and there's some are going to be more averse to risk than others, and so it's just about trying to manage that, and I think it's going to take some culture change too.
You work in sort of a more secret realm where it's harder to broadcast everything that you're doing. How are you engaging with industry, especially with those sort of constraints?
So we published out on FedBizOps, Federal Business Opportunities, as far as any requests for information and building up market research. That's where we release our requests for proposals and try to communicate with industry that way. We have our annual industry conference in May next month down in Tampa, and we talk about all of our needs, upcoming solicitations, et cetera. We have users there, our component commanders, everybody engaged. I mentioned the TILO, the Technical Industrial Liaison Office. They're set up to engage with industry, and folks can just go straight to our portal, submit an idea or something they want to share, and it gets pushed out. It's not just to the acquisition community. It goes to all of our J-code directors and so forth, and if there's interest or a need, they'll schedule a meeting, and they'll meet with the vendor and talk about what their product is or isn't. We have those capability collaboration events. They get posted on FedBizOps. They also get pushed out through that PIA, through Doolittle Research, through SoftWorks. In my opinion, I think we very much engage and try to over-communicate with industry on our needs.
What about smaller businesses? I think SOCOM is usually one of those commands that are on the forefront of finding smaller businesses or innovative businesses and kind of pushing them to work for them. And then sometimes those things kind of move on up to the bigger, broader parts of the military. How are you finding those smaller businesses that have that innovation that you need?
Well, we do try. I mean, actually, we do quite well. I can't remember what the percentage is, but as far as small business numbers, we're leading the department in awards. And a lot of times that may be our first route as far as see, is there a small business out there? Sometimes it comes out through these events, through the non-traditional defense means, because that's really, you know, there's a lot of great companies out there who have crazy great ideas, but then it's not always appealing to work with the Department of Defense given all the additional, you know, reporting and requirements from a financial perspective, et cetera. And then, of course, we have our Small Business Innovative Research Program, which that funding goes out, and at least my office, we take advantage of that route very, very often. And the beauty of that is once you get to phase three, which we have had successful phase three SBIRS transition, it's considered competed for life, and we get competition credit as well as the small business credit.
I want to move a little bit to the cloud. Now, are you leveraging MilCloud 2.0 at this point? What are you doing in those realms?
So far, we really haven't done much. I mean, we do some development type work in AWS, and we've been monitoring what's going on with the MilCloud efforts. We did complete a business case analysis to really look at that. Does it make sense, and for what applications? And we were looking for specific areas, but to date, we have not done that.
Is there any future of SOCOM ever getting there? I mean, do you see that ever happening?
Well, you know, with the way things are happening between the software vendors changing their licensing business models and really trying to push folks more to some kind of subscription service, that coupled with what's happening with the hardware vendors and being able to do a lot more on a smaller platform, and then that whole perpetual software licensing model kind of changing, and, you know, with the number of processors and core. I mean, if things continue down that path, I think you'll be forced into doing something on the cloud. But there is the security piece. I know there's some vendors that are really getting aggressive to getting after the additional security levels that especially the Department of Defense is going to require. But I don't think everything is going to be best suited for the cloud environment. I think it really just depends. I think there's probably still going to be a need for some on-prem type data centers, but it remains to be seen.
How are you guys using data analytics? Are there any areas where it's been helpful for you, and or is it one of those things, again, where it's tough for you?
We're trying to use data analytics more in the logistics realm. I would say we're not there yet, and that is an area that our J4 directorate is heading up, trying to look at across the board from an enterprise perspective. But, you know, the other area that everybody's into data analytics is the whole processing at the edge data, so you're not having to send it back for things such as processing, exploitation, dissemination. That's a big push. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about it at the department level as far as what can be done on the sensors instead of having stuff back and processed and done. So there's probably a great wealth of data analytic opportunities in that space, but I'm very interested to hear, and I've made some notes, follow up with you on some of what you guys are doing on your contracting and your data analytics side from a pricing perspective.
Deborah Woods is Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command. She was speaking on an AFSIA Nova panel hosted by Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. Hear the rest of her remarks after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions, utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
Information technology can be one of the more difficult areas for agency leaders to address through purchases. On a recent AFSIA Nova panel hosted by Federal News Radio Scott Massioni, he asks Deborah Woods, Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command, what some of her agency's biggest challenges are. She's followed by Ralph Colavita, J62 Program Executive Officer for the Defense Logistics Agency.
Just with the rapid pace and how things are changing and constantly, and all of a sudden stuff is no longer, you know, it's obsolete or vendors are no longer going to support it, and being able to be agile enough to stay on top of that is a challenge in the IT world, and even trying to predict some of the software licensing and some of the cybersecurity challenges associated with, hey, you need to get this product off. And I know you mentioned Windows 7. I was thinking of the whole Windows 10 mandate and the challenges associated with implementing that when it was not planned or, you know, programmed or budgeted, and we're all dealing with trying to respond to the DoD CIO. So I suspect it'll only get worse as everything's more interdependent and technologies converge.
Ralph?
I see the coming up the IT challenge is with the folks that you need to do this. In bringing in these new technologies, you have to bring in new elements of folks. You have to get people either trained up, and in some cases that might not be an option, or attracting the younger talent out there. Mm-hmm. The kids in school that are learning as matter of courses like Python or R and statistical languages that are given SAS in order to do their college grad work. They're using these products to make sure that how can we attract that talent? Absent attracting that talent, we have to go out and contract for it. The problem I see with that is not so much in the contracting of it, is from the clearances. Often these non-defense department will not have clearances. And when you got to bring somebody in, and if you're working, whether if you're working NIPR is one thing, if you're working CIPR, it's a whole other world. Yep. But how do they get clearances? And because it's not like getting a driver's license kind of thing. How do you get that? So your opportunity is either grow your own and, you know, bring them in and get them cleared and all that, or hire, but they have to have clearances. And where I've seen it, that the long part was, is in getting those clearances for folks that aren't former military or aren't former government, Those for those other folks, that seems to be the long pole, getting that clearance, because they can't work on it. They might have the expertise, the smarts to do all this and use the tools, but we can't allow them at our data. And I see that being a challenge, especially as we're going forward, the rate technology is changing and the products that are out there. The things that you can do today with a product that you could never, couldn't do 5 years ago unless you were a trained command line kind of person knowing how to write code. That's where I see the challenge going forward.
That's Ralph Colavita, J62 Program Executive Officer for the Defense Logistics Agency. He was joined by Deborah Woods, Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command at a recent AFSIA Nova panel. Hear the rest of the discussion after another break. I'm Eric White.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions, utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.
We continue the recent AFSIA Nova panel on innovative acquisition strategies hosted by Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. He opened up for questions for Deborah Woods, Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command, and Ralph Colavita, J62 Program Executive Officer for the Defense Logistics Agency.
This one's for Ms. Woods. You indicated you involve the users throughout the requirements and development processes. Do you use DevOps process to do that or another approach?
So I guess I would say that we do that because, as I mentioned, they're part of our team to help put together our performance specifications. They're part of the design review. They're part of all of our design reviews, our testing, and we're continuously getting feedback. And even with some of our experiments and combat evaluations, because, of course, at least for my portfolio, my budget is about 3% of my $700 million TOA. This year is an unusual year. It's around 6% of it is RDT&E. So we rely heavily on modified COTS, NDI type products, and just integrating. So it's really all about figuring out what's out there and being able to integrate and modify it to meet the need. But I would say, yeah, we do that without, you know, knowing the formal name.
Through our use of Agile, we also do what we, the way we do a sprint, we involve the customer with it. They're part of our team. And I'll say what the difference has been. When we first started this, there was somewhat customer resistance. This isn't the way we do business. We write a requirement for you, we give it to you, you come back, you know, 6 months from now, and we test it, and that's not right. And they weren't used to this, because they have to put skin in the game too. So we worked with one of our customer groups. We involved them early on with the process. And in this case, we were doing sprints in the 2-week time frame. We'd get that out to them. They'd look, we'd make changes. And where we changed the requirement part would be, at the end, we would have what the acceptance criteria was. If we meet this acceptance criteria, we're rolling it out. Is it your full-fledged requirement? No, that's the concept of being agile. We will always deliver you a functional product, but it won't be your full until we get to the end cycle. What we've used DevOps for and DevOps tools, we use a Git repository, and I don't know if we're allowed to talk products or things here, but we use a Team Foundation server with a Git repository. We manage the requirements through that and our code base, but also into our code, we've built in testing right into the code where you can do automatic regression testing on there. We've also built in the document hooks where you can produce automated documentation for this, up to and including screenshots if that's your requirement. Because it was not doing us any good delivering in 2 weeks when we couldn't get the documentation done for 4 weeks. So we were getting behind the curve. So we needed to not only do sprints, but also get our end, the IT end, taken care of. So we found there was quite a few DevOps tools that could help us, but those have to go up Naturally, we have to get them on our IT solutions document. We have to get our chief technical officer to sign off. We have to go over to our cyber group to make sure that these tools are okay, to scan them. Some are open source, so you have to scan them, make sure they're all clear. So there was a lot of upfront work, but it's panning out now. It allows us to move a little bit quicker. And we've gotten more customer engagement. Other customers that we said we're about to do this now are, for us, our J7, our acquisition community. Their heads told, he said, I don't have to brief him anymore. He's bought in. He subscribes to Agile now, so we don't have to brief it no more. His team's on board, and they're one of our major customers, so that's how we move forward with it.
Okay, well, I have one more follow-up that before we head out, which I really wanted to touch on that talent topic that you brought up, Ralph, and also for everyone else. I mean, how can the government help bring in some talent in the acquisition side? I mean, they do have some programs that you've been able to use to bring in younger people, but how can you get them excited about public service or just working in the government when there's Google or Uber or whatever else that they could go and probably make a lot more money doing?
Well, to me, I've been in DLA for 34 years. To me, it was the mission. I think for public service, you have to want to support. Like for me, it's supporting the warfighter. I've never served, but I know. And I've met them, I've worked with them. The people out there that are serving, that's what we do. We supply them with stuff. If you have that mission in your head, that's what you're doing, I think you can make this a career. The government has been good to me. I was able to move up into it, it's a nice livelihood. To young people coming in, I don't know. I think it's hard to sell it sometimes. Unless you actually show them. We actually give briefings to our contractors and government people where we explain what we're doing, what this project really means. It's IT, but what's the benefit? How it supports the warfighter? We do that so they can understand that. As far as positionals in DOA, we offer 7-9-11s. It's a grade type with improvements in grade as opportunities, especially if you're in the 1102, which is the contracting field. To entice people to come in. You can come in at a salary and get a year, a bump, and a year, another bump, and potentially you'll be a GS-12 at the end of that period where you're making good money. Now, a lot of college graduates, I know there's the Googles out there and the Amazons and the big companies, but they're not all getting those jobs. There's a lot of ones that aren't getting that. So the government is still a nice salary kind of career, especially if you look at it, you're supporting a warfighter. I mean, if that's what your mindset isn't that, if it's all just about money, no, I don't think we're the place to do.
That's Ralph Colavita, J62 Program Executive Officer for the Defense Logistics Agency. He was speaking alongside Deborah Woods, Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, Communications, and Computers with U.S. Special Operations Command at a recent AFSCME Nova panel hosted by Federal News Radio Scott Massioni. Find this entire episode of Agency in Focus online. Head to federalnewsradio.com and search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus SOCOM, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency in Focus.
Leidos is proud to support U.S. SOCOM and its mission to protect America's interests around the world. SOCOM's can't-fail missions can't afford anything less than the latest cutting-edge technology. That's why at Leidos, we develop adaptive and agile solutions utilizing open systems architecture that rapidly integrates new innovations, ensuring special operations forces have the decisive advantage on the battlefield. At Leidos, we're helping SOCOM achieve mission success today and transform mission readiness for tomorrow. To learn more, visit leidos.com.